Reading FC rose to the heady heights of 19th off the back of two spectacular first half goals against Millwall on Saturday. Jordan Obita and Sam Baldock making their returns to the first side. Pretty special with two absolute pingers from range. I'm Mark Mayer and welcome to episode 208 of the Tyler Stem podcast. And after a 2-1 win versus Millwall, we have Westy here to discuss three very important points for the Royals. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Sorry about letting you down last week. I know you did mention it earlier in last week's show.
No, it's absolutely fine. We for the one time I actually had two guests arranged, it's probably the best time for one of them to drop out, I suppose.
It was a free form of the two former presenters and the one that does it now as well, wasn't it? Unfortunately, I'm never getting a room together. People start assuming we're the same person with different voices.
Well, I'm not that good at impressions. So, okay. 2-1 win against Millwall then, Westy. Just before we jump into the recap, it's nice that we're sitting here probably for the second or third week in a row talking about something positive, really.
No, it's good. It's been a nice change around. I've been impressed with the way he's gone about his business, especially as he had a sort of difficult start with being called a snake and stuff like that, which I said would die down as soon as he started winning. That's exactly what's happened.
Yeah, soon enough we'll get back to talk about defeats. I don't think it'll be too long if this is going to be a honeymoon period or anything longer. So let's talk about that 2-1 win against Millwall then with the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
Right, Westy, the basis of this game, I guess, is that we battered them first half and came away with a 2-1 win. And the stats kind of show that in the fact that 12 shots Reading got in the game. 8 of them came in the first 38 minutes. So you can kind of get the sense that we came out quickly. We actually ended up with 2 fewer shots than Millwall. Obviously, one more goal is the important thing. But for this, felt like the sort of game where Reading knew they had to pick up 3 points at home. Millwall, I think they'd only lost 1 in 6 going into the game, came out the traps firing pretty quickly. 2 absolute worldies to give us the points. And that was almost, you know, we'll talk about whether we were going to fluff it in a minute. But doing that, 2 goals up, it's almost job done.
Yeah, it's nice to get a good start, a nice early lead. As we've seen down the years in the Championship, whoever scores the first goal in general picks up some points. So we're doing that now, which is good. I think Millwall were sort of a team that are caught between having a new manager and the old one. Whereas in the first half, I think they tried to play a bit more. And in the second half, they decided to revert to the usual style of trying to batter teams and sort of bully them. You've got to say for Reading, for the first hour, they were well in control of the game. And let's say we've been scoring when we've been on top, which was the problem under Gomez, but doesn't seem to be a problem under Bowen.
Well, the nature of the goal shows a real sign of confidence, doesn't it, that the players have at the moment. That I wouldn't say Gomez was the sort of manager who told players they couldn't shoot from range, because we scored some nice goals under him as well. But for the players to, and a beater with that sort of long range effort as the ball bounces to him, I suppose it takes a heart of pure ice to not shoot that. I think any of us playing in the park or anything, if the ball bounces to you outside the area, you have a hit at it. And he almost scored against Preston a couple of weeks ago. So it was great to see him, obviously the nature of the goal, but great to see him rewarded for what's been an absolutely terrible time out of the game with a first Medeski Stadium goal.
Yeah, and it was, again, like you said, the Preston strike that won us the game essentially a few weeks back. Was very similar, and it just shows how good a footballer that Jordan Obita is, because you say we'd have a shot if he's down the park. It's very difficult to smash a ball that hard and keep it low, and he's done that twice now, and it just goes to show the quality he's got on the left side, and we knew that anyway. I remember when he first came to the side as a left winger, and his crossing was always very good. And we've had a few decent left-footed players down the years, and I think you'd have to put Jordan Obita up there with him.
Well, I suppose it's the benefit, obviously, with the 3-5-2, you've got someone who isn't, I mean, Yeardom I wouldn't say in this category, but there are players, let's say Tyler Blackett, who is a left back that you would have to convert into being an attacking player in that 3-5-2. Obita is an attacking player that you've converted into a left back. So when you are going forward, it's just natural for him, and he's got that sort of ability to, as you say, put a ball in the box, have a shot. It comes much more naturally to him.
It's his position, isn't it? I think wing back is his position. He's not a winger. I wouldn't say he was a convincing left back all the time, but wing back is definitely his position. So he's fitted in quite nicely into this system since he's come back. And I think it's testament as well to sort of some of the old guard that the manager Bowen's sort of relying more on them in more recent weeks. Obviously, Bulldogs been scored 2-2. I think Bulldogs there to stay, because from what I can see of the way they've played under Bowen is that he wants a player up front that can run the channels, can chase down defenders, and I think that's Bulldogs' game. Whereas you look, what I've said recently, when Jowell's played up front, his work rate is poor, and I think he struggled to get back into that team, whether he's fit or not.
It's interesting with Jowell, isn't it? Because you think of, as you say, his game is very similar to Puskás's game, basically, and we've discovered under Gomez they can't really play together. It's going to be very interesting when Jowell's back. I think he might be a few weeks away with what I think is a foot injury. But he's not going to be, you know, it's going to be very hard to dislodge Sam Bulldog. I remember Wim last week said he was kind of like a, almost like a Noel Hunt sort of player. Actually reminds me a little bit of Simon Church when he was in his good spell, because he could, you know, as you say, run those channels and everything, but also pick out a really nice top corner finish. And that is the, you know, that's just the sort of, I would put it down to that basic level of almost championship experience of saying, you know, I don't have to be in the box. I don't have one trick up my sleeve. I only score the same goal every time. I can do it from range. I can, you know, be in the box and nab the little equaliser like he did against QPR. And that's ultimately, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that Yaku Meite has that in his arsenal. I wouldn't say that Puskás really shows that at the moment. I think probably Zhao does, but he's not fit. And therefore, you have to say at the moment, the Bulldog is probably our best striker.
Well, I think if you look at the strikers in isolation, Bulldog is the perfect foil for all of them, isn't he? I mean, if he's gonna do that sort of buzzy B routine that I call it. I mean, he's not the strongest on the ball. I thought he was a bit light, especially against QPR. But if he's going to be a buzzy bee and he's going to chase defenders down and be a problem to them, you can afford to have them three playing up as the main striker, Zhao, Meite and Puskás. You can afford for them to go and stand up the pitch and sit in the box, because we know what they're good at and we know what they're not good at. And Bulldog is sort of better at the jobs that they're not good at, if that makes sense. So I think Bulldog's made himself the perfect fall for all three of them. So I think them three are just vying for the one place, and that is the main striker.
Yeah, and it actually works as well, I would say, with the centre midfielders we've got, because we know Swift and Ajaria, not huge runners. I would say Ajaria is a bit more of a runner than Swift is, but if you've got someone who can tire out defenders, I think that's, again, that's kind of something that McDermott worked a lot with, that a player who can just make sure all of the defenders across, you know, the back four of the opposition have a job to do to look after him, because he doesn't just stand in one place, and he tires them out, that creates space for everyone else, and pretty much all three of them, Puskás, Swift and Ajaria, give them a yard of space and then they become incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, they do, and like I say, if you look at the earlier games when we did have Zhao and Puskás up front, I mean, one of my biggest complaints was we've got two strikers up front praying as forwards and they're not doing what I call the dirty side of the game. They're not running the channels, they're not chasing down defenders, and Zhao and Puskás, although it looked like it was going to work quite nicely against Cardiff, I think Zhao has to play as the main forward, because if you watched him play for Sheffield Wednesday when they beat us first game of the season, when he came on, he was exceptional at keeping the ball. And I think with that foil of Bulldog, sort of buzzy being around him, then I think he'd suit that position as well. And Meite's got a bit more to his armoury where you can play him wide if you need to. But I just think it's them three playing for one position at the moment, because especially as he's scoring Bulldog, you can't really take him out of that side. And I think he fits Bowen's philosophy a lot better than some of the other strikers we've got, because like you said, he has wanted us to be nasty. And from what I've seen this over the last three games, we've certainly got more grit to our game. And it's nice to see him not buckle on Saturday like they would have done probably under Gomez, where once the ball started getting lofted in and we was under a lot of pressure, we've seen them go down before that like that. But they've got fight in the side now. And they've got quality because Ajaria is a top level player. And with Swift sort of playing a more sort of quarterback sort of role, that seems to be working quite nicely.
Well, what's interesting is off the bench was Danny Lodo on the weekend, who was available, but didn't get used off the bench. But where he's going to fit into that as well is going to be very interesting, because I still don't really know what sort of striker he is, a box-to-box or in-the-box finisher rather. Maybe you would say at the under 23 level, yes, but it's very hard to be that as an 18-year-old in the championship. And I would think if Bowen can make him into a sort of, you know, busy sort of striker like Bulldog, then we might have a real place for him in the team, which hopefully is the sort of thing you could do. The other thing of the game, obviously, Westy, we talked about the first 60 minutes. The last half hour was pretty much punctured by Millwall getting a goal back. It was a pretty decent goal, but the defending was a bit suspect for Morrison in particular. Was as you heard that, you know, 2-1, was there any kind of real fear that we'd fluff it?
Yes, I think there was. I mean, Bodvarsson had a kick that just went wide. I think Moore going off had a big impact on the side. But like I said, they held out, which was nice. I think we were all concerned that it might end up a 2-2 draw. But the keeper didn't have a great deal to save, but it's just the panic stations at the end. But they've coped with it pretty well, and I think we're all glad to see them get another win. And looking at the games they've got in front of them, you can't see why they can't continue winning. We're in a 19th position, as you said, but I think we're certainly a lot better than that. And with Preston going top this week, it just goes to show the league's not the strongest. And if you look at the top six, Reading have at least got points off most of them. So we are in a bit of a false position now. We've picked up our form. And as long as they keep putting in the work rate in, there's no reason why they can't fly up that league.
Yeah, looking at the table at the moment, you've got Forest in fifth on 25 points and Derby in 15th on just 4 points behind. And then from 15th down to Reading, you've got a 6-point drop. So there's a bit of a gap between sort of mid-table and lower mid-table at the moment. And those teams in lower mid-table, you've got Huddersfield, who are still above us, picking up points. Blackburn got a win on the weekend. So it's a very difficult league to judge, I guess, the Championship, because constantly there's always things going on and teams changing managers and rising up and falling down and whatnot. And obviously Stoke have just about to change their manager, but I'm at the moment. So plenty to keep an eye on for Reading as we, you know, make our way hopefully up the table in the next couple of weeks. And hopefully by Christmas we'll have a better idea that we aren't necessarily going to be in a relegation battle again this year. And the man behind that is Mark Bowen, and let's hear from his quotes before we come back and finish off the recap.
I was laughing actually, because watching the goal, their goal back on the video there, I think part of it, in all honesty, was, I mean, Sam Baldock's honesty running back, he'd sprinted 40 yards, he almost got in the way of Tyler trying to defend it went through his legs or something like, but hey, you can't knock him for that. It was the attitude that he showed in getting back in, from slowly making these guys realise, you know, that, again, I keep saying, repeating myself, I know, but we've got so much ability in the squad, and if we get the other side of the game right, then we're a match for anybody and we'll keep climbing the table.
One thing I'd say, Westy, to sort of round off this discussion is the fact of the starting lineup now has become so much more settled under Bowen. You can say this is, you know, maybe partly injury based or the fact that he's actually happy with the 3-5-2 and we're obviously getting points that way. But with Winnemotta is clearly above Pele at the moment in the lineup. Puskas and Baldock for the moment seem to be his preferred front two. Obita, I think the thing is, the only position that is changing is Obita and Richards. And we know that Jordan Obita, because of his injury, he can't play two games in a week. So that's just going to have to be how it is for now. And Richards wasn't even in the squad on Saturday, so probably had a knock himself. But otherwise, it seems to be there's a feeling of settled consistency now.
Yeah, and it's gone back to the old guard as well, really, hasn't it? I mean, because Miazga, and that was here last season, Najaria, you call them sort of old guarders as well, really, because they've been around quite a while. Yeah, it's gone back to the old guard. I think Bowen likes the players that were here originally. I think you said about, you talked about Danny Loader just a second ago. I think that Bowen likes him as a striker. I think he's obviously seen a lot of him in under-23s, and I think he's probably one season away, Loader, from being a decent Championship striker, if that makes sense, because I think that from boy to a man is a lot different, and from under-23s football to Championship, you know, there's a massive jump there. But I think he's got it. I just don't think it's a bit too early for him, but I think Bowen sees it in him and he obviously likes him. And same as Rinomota. Rinomota should never come out of that side in the first place. I don't think he'd done absolutely nothing wrong last season. I thought he was excellent. And again, he's another one who's a perfect foil for them two in midfield. Ajar and Swift, because he will do the dirty work, he will do the tackling, he will do the running around, and his energy levels is amazing. If you see him during a match, the amount of ground he covers is, like I said, it's a perfect foil for them two to play more. Pele's not impressed me, and I don't think he's impressed Bowen, that's why he's sat on the bench now. Yeah, and it's just an old guard feel to it, hasn't it? A Baldock coming in and a beater. You just see that Bowen must have thought, actually, I want to keep these players that have got a good Championship experience in. And he's obviously playing it the way that if you're in the side and you're doing well, then you don't come out of it, which I think is the way to be in a Championship. Obviously, if you get injuries, that's a bit different. And with Richards not being on the bench this week, I think that was more down to the fact that Tyler Blackett was available and he can cover two positions rather than the one. Otherwise, I'm sure he'd been sat on the bench.
Yeah, well, Blackett did come off, was the man chosen to come on for Liam Moore with his shoulder injury, which meant, there was a question about this in the mailbag, but it meant Tom McIntyre stayed on the bench, which is interesting again because it just showed that he probably, I mean, I kind of agree with it, probably preferred the experience of Blackett in the situation that we were in, given that the score was 2-0 as Moore came off. So just to, you know, shore up what is going to be a half hour of aerial bombardment.
Sorry, Matt, what's your thoughts on Blackett as a footballer? I know I shouldn't ask you the questions you're presenting, but I just wonder what you think.
No, I think that he's he has moments of genuine, you know, that's the sort of class that you see a Manchester United Academy player have. And he has, you know, sometimes he puts a cross into the box, sometimes he makes a tackle and it's, you know, it's perfect. There's no complaints. But you can make a claim that perhaps over the 90 minutes he doesn't provide complete concentration, you could maybe say, and that perhaps sometimes gets beaten a little bit too easily in the tackle. But I would say that he's quite similar to Chris Gunter in that sort of effect, that 75 minutes of the game, you wouldn't really notice that he was doing anything wrong. But then there are a couple moments of switching off, yeah. And that's when I think that's the difference between someone like him and someone like, you know, more Miasca, who hopefully give you a good 88 minutes at least of playing well.
I just think he looked to him on Saturday because he's a more experienced player. He's a big, strong player. You know he's good on the ball. I just think the way that Millwall were playing at that time, he probably thought, no, let's put the more experienced man on there. You know that he can handle himself in this division, whereas McIntyre's still young and learning and probably thought, do I really want to put him in the last 25 minutes, 15 minutes or so, sorry. And put him under pressure like that, probably didn't, and we won the game, so you could have to say it was the right decision.
Yeah, he probably foresaw that there was going to be the aerial bombardment coming in from Millwall. Bodvarsson and got thrown at half time for a nippy left winger, so I think that was pretty clear to see what was going on.
Yeah, exactly. I told you what was going to happen in the second half, and it was nearly successful for him, and I think he probably looked at it for the experience wise that Blackett would be your choice. And like I said, the reason he was on the bench is because he can play a number of positions, whereas Richards probably can't.
Yes, well, we'll discuss that as quite a few questions we've got on the mailbag this week, so we may as well crack on and jump into that.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
Simeon Pickup, the Tilehurst End website editor, has mailed in from his lovely Italian holiday that he's on at the moment. Hence why we're probably a little bit behind on getting all things up on the website than we usually are. But Simeon asked this week, does Baldock's revival show that he should have been used more under Gomez? Westy, my quick answer to this is yes. It's very easy just to say yes, obviously, scoring and that's that. But I think the reason there is because Gomez obviously had spent, I mean, you can say these players arrived quite late in the window, but otherwise I would just say generally more speaking that he spent a few weeks learning these players in a way that you'd like to think he'd have known how to use them when they arrived, rather than getting them in the, you know, getting them on the training pitch and then learning how to use them. Case in point, he kept playing, you know, Puskas with Zhao or Puskas with Mate, and as we've discussed, as a two, it just doesn't work. And if he persisted with it, and it continued to not work, I'd say that there probably is no real example of any games where it did work as those two as a partnership, or a selection of those three as a partnership. And with Baldock coming in and showing how to make a partnership work, particularly at this level, shows that Gomez was wrong to drop Baldock.
Yeah, again, I think I think what Baldock's benefit from is the style change. I think if you try and play Baldock in Gomez's side that wants to keep the ball, and you want a striker who can hold the ball and play off of, as Oliveira does, as Zhao does, then he doesn't fit that mould, because I say he's weak on the ball. Baldock's easily pushed off of football. And in this style, he doesn't need to be that player that holds the ball. He needs to be the player that can chase people down, run the channels, expect the ball over the top, that sort of player. In Gomez's side, no, I don't believe he should have played him. I think he was perfectly right to not pick him based on the fact that the style they were going to play, he wouldn't have fitted into it. But he does fit this style, and because he fits this style, now he's first name on the team sheet because he's scoring goals and he's getting man of the match performances and he's being a problem. So I think, yes, Gomez was right not to pick him because he wouldn't have fitted into that style of play. And I think that's why he didn't pick him. It's as simple as that, really.
No, I do think there was a place for him on the as you, we've kind of discussed. If you've got one player who's running around, you don't even maybe don't even have to give him the ball, but just I think that just creates the space then for the others. And perhaps you're right in the terms that he's not a passing football player. But one thing that I suppose we were suffering from in the attack with Gomez was that it was just a bit too slow. And with the strikers, you know, the other strikers that he was playing, that was a big problem. Baldock's not a pacey player, but does kind of stretch the opposition a little bit more.
Yeah, as I say, he's a buzzy bee, isn't he? He keeps them on their toes, and like Mackie used to be. Now, Mackie was not the best footballer in the world, and never was and never will be. But what he did give you was energy, and that can pay dividends, especially as the game goes on and centre backs get tired. The last thing they want to do is be chasing someone around. And I think that's what Baldock offers. And you're right, I mean, there was a place on the bench. I'm not saying he shouldn't have picked him full stop. But what I'm saying is in the system he had and the strikers that he bought, I don't think Baldock fitted into his style. And that's why he didn't play him. But he does fit into this style and he fits in rather well, you'd have to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Ram at Swinabas asks, would you rather fight a rhino-sized rhinomota or a rhinomota-sized rhino? I think most... I mean, most rhinos are kind of really rhinomota-sized anyway. They don't tend to be 12 feet tall. So I'd probably have to fight the rhino-sized rhinomota rather than the rhinomota-sized rhino, Westy, unless you have any advances on that.
Well, at 40, I'd rather not fight either of them because I'd run out of gas pretty quickly, I'd thought.
I think, to be fair, even at 25, I'd run out of gas against any kind of rhinomota-sized or rhinomota-esque being anyway. So, Christian Frank asks, do any of the players seem to be struggling with Bowen's tactics? If so, can you see any clear areas we'll want to strengthen in January? In terms of struggling, I would say the ones that you probably suggest the most struggling, Puskas is struggling to an extent, but there's no way in hell we're going to go and sign a replacement for him in January. He costs too much money.
And
then any clear areas we'll want to strengthen, I suppose... I think he's quite happy with Pele off the bench as the alternative to Rinomota because he keeps bringing him off the bench and using him when we're, you know, doing well in games as a way of shoring things up. Otherwise, I wouldn't say we're going to go and get a centre midfielder to challenge Ajari and Swift. You know, maybe I'm wrong in that. I can't see us going and buying a striker, for, as I just said. Wing-backs, pretty comfortable. Centre-backs, yeah, you could always have one or two more, but we had a couple on the bench on the weekend, so... I do think that it's going to be a quiet January at the moment.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they signed anyone, to be honest with you. I think they've got a strong squad. I've said this from the start of the season. Now people are sort of playing to their potential. Like I said, we've got a settled side. The only thing that would concern me, same as you, is we're playing three centre-backs. If two of them get injured, then you're sort of bare bones in it a little bit. So maybe you want to strengthen with a lone centre-back. But I can't see him bringing anyone in, to be honest. I'd be surprised if he was given... the license to do it for starters, because they have spent a lot of money this year and we've already got a lot of players on loan. So I don't think we will see any signings in January. And I'll be honest with you, as long as you get the best out of the players we've got, I don't think you need any.
No, we've got loads of kids on the bench. We can always, if we're absolutely flying and we're comfortable, we can always play Elise or Loda or someone like that. And just, you know, if you need some fresh impetus in a season that hopefully will at the very least be drifting to sort of mid-table comfort, then we've got, you know, academy players who can come in. And rather than playing, I think the only sort of players that we would sign are lone players, either academy players from other clubs, which I think our academy might be well be good enough to say that's necessary, or like fringe players in Premier League.
So ironically, Mark, the players that have brought into the side recently under Bowen have been players we've had there before that haven't had a look in. So technically, we've got new players in the side, but just players that are here before, that's all. I mean, McCleary's coming off the bench now in a little cameo role, so he's done really well against QPR. I think that'd be his way they're going to use him going forward. We know what we get from him. You know he's got a trick. You know he's got a bit of pace about him, but you also know he's probably only got about 35 minutes in him, 45 minutes max. But he's certainly a good asset to have off the bench if you want to create a goal. So he's come back into the side recently. You're still not seeing Chris Gunter at all. And like I say, if you've got some injuries to your right side, I mean, I'm not saying he's the best in the world, but he's certainly capable of filling in for matches in the Championship. He's not a bad player at this level. So is there anywhere you need to bring anyone in? I don't think so. I think we've got more than enough, especially in forward areas, to cope with the rest of the rigours of the Championship.
Well, and also one of the areas in I'm not too aware of what's gone on with Raphael myself, but there was a rumoured injury for him, and I must admit I'm not too clued up on whether he's out for, you know, any period of time. But the two unfortunates have asked us if Raphael's injury is serious, should Mannone come in rather than Virginia or Walker? Vito Mannone's situation is pretty simple, really. He has now finished his loan at Minnesota United. He was the MLS Goalkeeper of the Year for the 2019 season, and he's got a contract with Reading until the end of the season. So, I mean, I don't think that we'll see him play. I'm not aware, as I say, of the Raphael injury being serious, but I think Sam Walker being off the bench is pretty comfortably the number two. I think Yao Virginia is pretty comfortably not going to play for Reading again, and Mannone, I suppose he would be ahead of Virginia if push comes to shove.
Ironically, I mean, if Manone's back and Raphael was injured, I'd put him in goal. There's no doubt in my mind that he's the best goalkeeper out of them three. Like I said, he was an MLS goalkeeper. He's had a good career. All right, he was at fault for a few goals the back end of the last season he played, but he's better than Sam Walker, and he's certainly better than Chow Virginia. So I'd put him in goal. If you're paying him, you might as well play him.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree that he's better than Sam Walker. It just depends how fair, I suppose, Bowen wants to be for a player that's obviously not been around for the last year or so, and was affected with one of those ostracised, I suppose you could say, by the former manager. But if there's a clean slate and there's an opportunity, then yeah, I suppose he is a better goalkeeper than Sam Walker. Laura Royal asks, what has changed? Can we keep it going? What are the priorities to improve? I'll keep that short and sweet. I'd say, can we keep it going? You said about the fixtures we've got coming up. Luton, then Brentford away, and then Leeds at home. As championship fixtures go, pretty winnable.
Yeah, I think obviously Luton at home you'd fancy. Brentford away, we always struggle at Brentford away, but it's not beyond the realms of possibility we might turn them over. And Leeds at home, I mean, they gave us a pasting last year, but in general, we tend to get draws against Leeds if you look back in the history books. So, yeah, again, you never know in a championship, do you? I mean, I had Fulham to score at home on Saturday and they got beat 3-0, so you can never can tell.
No, and hashtag gamble as well for that. Talk about, I suppose, Philip Holland's question of thoughts on Barron preferring to sub Blackett over McIntyre following Liam Moore's injury. I suppose we have covered that, so we'll move on to say about Tommy's question, because I've got quite a few this week. Tommy asking, who in the current squad can you see being a one-club player? He says that McIntyre and Obita are up there. I would hold off on McIntyre just for the moment, because I can quite see him going out on loan and for next season, and we've certainly seen over the years a lot of players who have gone out on loan have tended to stick with that club if they've done relatively well, and obviously depending on how Reading are doing. In terms of being a one-club player, I mean, Obita's contract is up at the end of the season. Can you see him, Westy, sticking around? Because he's in that kind of useful mould, I suppose, for us, in that he's a good player for Reading, but he's not so good that anyone's ever really going to come and bid for him.
Yeah, no, plus he's had an injury that's kept him out of football for 2 years, which will warn a lot of people off, because people don't want to take risks with a lot of money. I know he's out of contract, so he would get picked up. I'd be surprised if Reading didn't reinstate his contract, give him another 2-3 year contract. I think Obita would be more than willing to sign it. I think he's well aware that he owes the club from not being playing for two seasons and getting paid. And he's been a Reading boy for years, and I'd be surprised. And he's good age still. He's not old. I mean, people, because he's been around the first team, they think he's sort of getting towards 30, but he's nowhere near that. So, I think Beta could end up being here for a good 10 years easily. I think a bit of loyalty in football, and we have this conversation quite a lot. I think it's a bit of a fallacy, really. I think that you've got players like Lampard who kiss the badge and say how loyal they were to Chelsea, but Chelsea were good payers. They paid good money. And if they didn't, then they wouldn't be sticking around along. Same with Steven Gerrard, very similar situation with him back in the day where he stayed at Liverpool all his career. But if, you know, he had opportunities to go to Chelsea, he was going to go. But it all depends how much money you pay. It's as simple as that. The people are loyal to people who are ready to pay them. And if someone like Renamota was going to get offered 50 grand to go and play for Southampton, then I'm sure he'd wave us goodbye and say, see you later. I think you're only loyal to the people that pay you well. And if you're getting paid well, you don't tend to leave. As simple as that.
No, it's a very good point. I am also very thankful for your other point of Obita not being old, because I discovered the other week that he's about 3 weeks younger than I am. So thank you.
Yeah, he's still a young man.
He is. He's only 25. And so, yeah, he's still got plenty of gas left in his tank.
Exactly, and you need, and again, if you look at the way Reading are playing, I don't think we answered that question earlier about can we keep it up all season. Now, the intensity Reading are playing at now, you have to have young lads with young legs, you know, and to get around a pitch, and that's what Reading have got at the moment. So can they keep it up? Yes, because I think that you've got full-back players, like we said, like Pele comes on, he fills the gap when Reading Motors running out of steam. Again, it all depends on injuries, and that's the way it always depends on. I think you've got plenty of legs in that side to play that way, and that's what they're going to do. I think if you remember when Copper was here, we used to play that high-intensity football all the time, didn't we? And we managed to keep that up all season, so I don't see where there's any reason why we wouldn't.
No, absolutely, I agree with that. And Stuart asks, should the board wait until the end of the season with Mark Bowen's contract? It's a light risk of him getting doing a great job and getting poached. Or do we wait and see how he does? I suppose the obviously Mark Bowen is on a contract until the end of the season at the moment. The other risk is that he does a bit of an Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and as soon as we give him a new contract, he starts being not as good as he was pre-contract. So I think my personal take, Westy, is that as things are, it being November as well, we've got plenty of time to just let it play out and see how it goes. And there is no rush, because if we give him a contract, how long would you only give him till the end of the following season? Would you give him 2 years? I think that's probably a bit much. And I don't personally see there being any real risk, unless, you know, something ridiculous happens, of him being poached.
Because I don't know why they give managers long contracts anyway. What's the point? I don't understand it, because if they're doing well and someone poaches them, then that would happen anyway, whether they're under contract or not. And if they're doing badly, you have to pay them out for the 3 years that you've given them. So I don't know why they don't have a year-to-year contract anyway. Because let's face it, they don't stick around that long anywhere anymore, do they? And most of the time, clubs want to get rid of them pretty quickly when things go badly. So there is no sort of long-term. Everyone says we've got a long-term plan, but that's nonsense as well. Because if the long-term plan's not working in the first year, then they get the boot. So why not give them a year-to-year contract? And just if they want to go, they go. And if they don't, they don't. I've seen so many managers go through Reading FC from being a kid at five watching Reading to now that I just don't care anymore. Do you know what I mean? Whoever's in charge, great. If you're winning, great. If you're not, get your bags, get out, and someone else come and do the same job. It's year to year is more than enough, I think, for any manager.
I seem to remember that being more of a thing maybe like 10, 15 years ago when I was watching football in my younger years, and thinking that a 12-month rolling contract was pretty much what every manager got. I think it's more these days they get a longer contract, as you say, that long-term plan. It's a bit of a PR stunt, isn't it, really?
It's a nonsense.
And David Moyes got 6 years at Man United, and I don't think that's even run out yet.
No, that's what I'm saying. And players are sellable, so you need to put them on good contracts. You know, if you've got someone who's 19, 20, you need to give them a five-year contract, great, because they've got value. But managers don't have value, not really. I mean, someone will come in and give you some compensation money, but in the grand scheme of things, it's normally a pittance. Like I say, I think we were all worried at the back end of last season that Gomez was going to go somewhere. And if he would have done, we'd have all been like, wow, that was a person who was going to come in to save Red FC. But as it turned out, he didn't. So who cares? I don't care who's in charge as long as they're winning.
No, that's a fair point. And I really can't see him getting poached, to be honest. I think that managers don't tend to get poached from championship teams so much these days. I can't think Premier League teams go abroad more often than not. And certainly the higher championship teams, I mean, even they go aboard these days with likes of Bielsa, Philip Cocu.
I think the way to look at it, Mark, is like if you're the Reading manager, then you've probably got the 40th biggest job in the country. So above that, who's going to take you? Like you say, a lot of these clubs now go European. So why would we be worried about it? Just give him a year's contract. If he doesn't like it, see you later.
Well, very much. And Royals fan 36 ends the mailbag with a question, or a sort of trio of questions, kind of all linked into one, asking: is Obita what we've been missing? Should Omar Richards go out on loan? And what's your take on this Osho situation? Just to round off the Osho question, there is that he played a trial game for Ipswich under 23s the other week. I mean, this is, I think, an idea of whether he was going to go out on loan there, or whether he was, you know, maybe going to... I think he might be out of contract at the end of the season.
Contract up, yeah.
Yeah, so just having a look at him, really. But since then, it's about 10 days ago now. I don't think anything has come of it since. So, yeah, well, I suppose we'll just have to wait and see on that. Obviously, he's not in and around the first team as it is at the moment. Interestingly, he played Coventry under-23s, and they had Tenai Watson playing for them, who's on loan from Reading. So So two Reading youth teamers who aren't really in the mix for first team football were playing in that game. In terms of the Obita Richards thing, I don't think we really can send Richards out on loan because, especially with Obita's injury, we need a second choice left back. And yes, Tyler Blackett can do it, but I think Richards is a better left back than Blackett is.
He's a better wing back, certainly. I just think that with players that go out on loan, the reason you send them out on loan is to get up to championship speed or at least see if they can get to that championship level. So you send them to someone like Coventry, like you said, for 6 months, whatever. If they do well there, you think, well, actually, yeah, you are capable of stepping up that level. Richard's already proved that he's capable of stepping up to level because he's played in it and he's played in it quite consistently due to the fact that Obita's been injured. And I think that what they do with them two is, like you say, they will rotate them. So you might find Tuesday it'd be Richard's game and Saturday it'd be Obita, or it'd be horses for courses. I think that either one, I think Richard's been very good this season when I've seen him play. Yes, he makes the odd mistake where he loses his man, but that's just come with his age and he will learn that. I think he's got all the ability in the world, and I think that them two are very capable left-sided players in a championship setting. So why would you send him out on loan? It'd just be pointless. Say he goes out on loan, gets injured, then you're struggling for left-backs again, and left-backs are quite well sought after people because there aren't that many of them. And we're lucky enough that we've got two really good ones.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be happy with them for next season. If you're challenging for promotion and you've got Obita and Richards as your left wing backs within that system, I'm genuinely happy with that. I think it's a good little setup. Two young homegrown players, both have a good amount of stamina on them, both can get forward, and you know, both have a relatively decent amount of defence on them. Yeah, I'm happy with them as they are. I don't think you need to send Richard's out on loan. So we'll draw to a close the mailbag section of the show then and jump ahead to News Bites and talk about the player of the month on thetarlhurstend.com.
Send in your views to thetarlhurstend@gmail.com and have your say in the mailbag.
Right, before we jump into player of the month, let's have a little rattle through what's going on at the clubs, or the teams rather, around the club. And the women's team suffered a late 1-0 defeat to West Ham in the Conti Cup at the Mad Stad on the weekend. It was keeper Grace Maloney's 150th appearance for the club, so congratulations to her. The women's game now has the international break next weekend, so the women's team aren't in action until Bristol City on the 17th of November at the Mad Stad. The under-23s, Danny Loder, just talking about him earlier, he hit a hat-trick in the 3-3 draw with Villa, and then on the weekend they went and won 4-0 against Sunderland. Josh Barrett, Michael Elise and Tyler Frost on the score sheet. Sunderland were reduced to 10 men at 1-0, so a good morale-boosting victory for them. Hopefully they're sixth in the league, and they next go to Swansea in the Premier League Cup on the 8th. That's in Woking, actually. It's a home game that's been playing in Woking for some reason. And the under-18s, they have a week off this weekend, so they're next against Southampton on November the 9th. And the Tyler Sten news of the player of the month is our winner is Ovie Ejaria. Westy, it's almost a one-horse race at the moment with Ovie Ejaria winning player of the month competitions, and it's just been another a continuation of his fine form over almost the entire season, you'd say.
Yeah, I mean, he's so good, isn't he? He's such a good player. I mean, great on the ball, good energy. He could even score a few more goals. That's the only thing you could say about him that he needs to improve on. But other than that, I mean, it's coming on leaps and bounds. And if they can get him for $3 million at the end of the season, that will be an absolute snip.
Yeah, it's such a good deal that I'm almost worried that it's not going to happen because it's like Liverpool could very easily negotiate a £10 million fee with the Premier League team or pay more money and it'll just go with them.
Yeah, I can see it not happening. It'd be a shame if it doesn't, but even the Liverpool fans that I've seen online and that have saying how well he's been doing at Reading, they'll keep their eye on him. I think he's more than capable of playing Premier League level, and it was a pleasure to have him here at the club at the moment.
Yeah, hopefully it's the sort of thing that we can have him for longer, but also, I mean, we've had it in the past when we've had players like Matty Upson come down from the Premier League. You just have to enjoy them while they last and get some good results, which we're certainly doing at the moment. And the final bit for News Bites this week is that the Nottingham Forest game, obviously postponed a week and a half ago, has now been rearranged for Tuesday the 21st of January of obviously 2020. So for anyone on a Tuesday night, I think that's just after we play Millwall away, so a couple of away games that week on what might be a very busy period, particularly if our FA Cup third round tie goes to a replay, that'll mean a very busy January, but that's in the books now for Tuesday 21st of January. And Speaking of games coming up on the 9th of November, Reading host Luton in the Championship. So let's talk about that now in Big Game Preview.
Back the boys and make some noise for the Tilehurst End podcast. Come on, you ass!
Right then, Westy, Luton are coming to the Mad Stad, and it's a good time to play them in the extent they've lost three in a row. They've won two, lost six in their eight games on the road this season. They've got the third worst defence in the league. They've obviously got that sort of promotion bounce. There's going to be a lot of Luton, I think, is selling out the away end to come down. So it's one of those games where they're going to be a little bit of the underdog now with the form we're picking up. But they're not a brilliant team, bit leaky. You'd say that this is well set up for more of the same from Reading and therefore 3 points.
Yeah, you'd have thought so. Like I said, they had a decent start, I seem to think. Remember Luton? I thought they would be strong at home all season because they've got good, strong home form from the year before. But yeah, it's not really happening for them. They are going down to the odd. Well, they're not getting hammered by any stretch of the imagination. I think they got beat 2-1 today on Saturday.
Yeah.
By Forest team, which is no shame in that. But yeah, I think Luton more. If you want to get up the league, you've got to be looking at Luton as a side at home that you should be running over, really. So I'd be surprised if we didn't get a win out of this one.
To be honest, my biggest fear with this game is the kind of nosebleed sense that we'd have gone from being so, you know, out of form to winning 3 out of 4. It almost just feels unlikely in the sense that something has to go wrong somewhere, and that's yeah, kind of the banana skin feel of this game, isn't it?
Yeah, I just think, I mean, I was looking at some of the reaction to the Luton result this Saturday from their fans, and they were saying that they're sort of getting stuck in naivety in this division where they would have got away with it in League One, and they're just, you know, it works higher up you go, the less mistakes you can make before you get punished. And I think they're coming to that circle at the moment where they're just making mistakes and getting caught and conceding goals. So hopefully they won't learn how to play well in the Championship until after we've played them, but I think that's been their main problem. They're just getting caught where they would have got away with it in Division One, and that just comes with the quality of players you've got. And people find this when they jump up from League One. Some teams take to it like a duck to water and end up being in a promotion chase again the year after, and some struggle. And I think if you look at the seasons gone past, the teams that do come up, your Barnsleys and sides like that, they do tend to struggle the next year to stamp their authority on the Championship, because it is a very difficult league, as we know.
Yeah, it feels like the gap between League One and Championship has grown quite substantially over the last few years. And Luton, obviously, they don't have the manager that really got most of their points in League One last season, although they can go and get him again now if they really wanted to, with Nathan Jones being out of a job. But, I mean, from a Reading perspective, there's not really any reason. We've got a whole week off going into the game. I can't see any reason why we change any of the lineup. I think even Puskás we probably keep in his striker position, keeping Mate on the bench. And then that's just really, it's a pretty comfortable, you know, week leading up to the game then, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. We should be more than capable of beating Luton Town at home. And if we don't, then obviously we can dissect that later on. But I'd
be surprised if we didn't turn them over on Saturday.
Yeah, hopefully the aforementioned injuries will be nice and sorted out for any team changes we might need to make. And that leaves us with the final part of the show, just to run over the predictions, then the prediction league of the Tilehurst End. And we've actually, what's usually a massive forebear to disappointment, is we all predicted a win against Millwall, and a win is what happened. So Johnny and Sim were the two who got a 2-1 scoreline. So Johnny's now on 9 points, Sim's on 6. So the league table currently stands with Handbags on 4, Ollie, Westy and Sim on 6. Then it's Wim on 8, Johnny on 9 and myself on 14 points with that lead I've built up. Still holding on, and I suspect, Westy, that this week's predictions are going to follow a bit of a similar sort of route.
Yeah, it's just going to be a case of who gets it right, hopefully. I'm sure we're all going to go for wins, and after my build-up just now, I can't not now, can I? So I'm going to go for, I reckon, let's go for a nice 3-0.
Yeah, 3-0. So yeah, I'm going to go with 3-1 because I think our defence isn't quite perfect yet. And Luton, I think Luton will probably come out and play. And they've had, as you say, a couple near misses with their games. And hopefully with our in-form striker alongside a couple of other attackers who have a bit about them, that's the sort of sort of weekend that we can hopefully be sat here next week and talk about as a nice easy win.
Yeah, and hopefully we can bridge the gap of the people above us and start dragging them in a bit.
Absolutely, that is the goal, and that's the, you know, that's the thing of being a Reading fan at the moment, that we aren't in that situation of counting down how many points we are away from the playoffs. We have to just keep grinding away results, really, and that's what we did quite well on the weekend. And that draws to a close episode 208 of the Tyler Sen podcast. Thank you very much, Westy, for popping by on this Monday.
You know I love it. Thank you.
And we'll be back probably next Sunday evening with episode 209 of the Tyler Sen podcast. And we now have a clean week to enjoy three decent results on the bounce under Mark Bowen. And going into, well, what I suppose is going to be the easiest game of those four if you look at it on paper. Football doesn't tend to get played on paper, though, and hopefully we won't be falling foul of some sort of banana skin this time next week. Until then, thank you for listening, and come on your arse.
Just starting.